Hello?
Welcome, everybody, to the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza, of course, brought to you by Bucky's Fifth Quarter. And I am Jake Kokorowski at the Polish Rifle, Scott Wisniewski here. Happy Thursday, everybody. Warm weather starting to come out, and I am excited. Temperatures in the 70s. Should be gorgeous. Make sure you enjoy yourself and you're with your friends and loved ones. Heading this weekend should be finally a nice blast of consistent warm weather. I think they call it the Omega High. And apparently that's not a Weather Channel generated theme like they do with those winter storms now. But it's actually something that they've even said on the Weather Channel. Hey, guess what? This is actually what we learn in Meteorology 101. We'll see if that's actually the case. As I have a couple of friends in the meteorology business there. But besides the weather, it should be a great time for us media guys to watch some spring practice. Probably I'll have to grab my SPF 30. Or, you know, we got John Veldhuis here from BadgerBlitz.com. John, I may just bring out, like, the Hawaiian tropic oil. I need a good tan. I am pasty white, and we might actually be able to watch a practice outdoors in the sunny venue of Camp Randall Stadium.
Yeah, they were outside today, and I suppose if you got out, one of those, like, little reflective mirrors or whatever, you sit on the lawn chair, if you go sit in the bleachers, I bet you get a pretty nice tan.
That would be nice, and that's something that I need because it has not – I used to live in Florida, and I look back on pictures when I was a teenager, and I weep. I openly weep nowadays when I see how pasty white I am. I can't see myself in the mirror at times, and that's how white I've become. But besides my tanning habits or lack thereof, you mentioned it. The Badgers were outside today with their spring practice instead of how we were, you know, what you've seen previously in the McLean Center. And, you know, I wasn't able to make it out there today, but wanted to ask you initial thoughts on the practice. I saw some things about Alex Hornibrook winning a nice little competition, saw some video on YouTube of Hornibrook winning the competition with throwing a ball into a bend into the corner of the end zone. But quarterback competition aside, what else did you see from today's practice?
Well, you know, obviously all eyes have been on the quarterbacks for most of these spring practices. But, you know, I guess the thing aside from, you know, the battle between Bart Houston and Alex Hornibrook that I'm kind of noticing is I think the Badgers are in the process of developing a few more, you know, pass-catching threats than maybe what we had become accustomed to over the past couple of years. George Rushing had a really good practice today. I thought he had a nice end-around touchdown on the ground. He caught what would have been a nice long touchdown through the air and made some other good catches over the middle. He's a guy that's kind of struggled with consistency over his career, but I thought he had a good day today. And then, you know, over the last couple of practices, I have been really impressed with the younger tight ends, like Kyle Tennyson in particular, has caught the ball really well. And that's to say nothing of you know, how Rob Wheelwright and Jazz Peavy have done. And, you know, this isn't to say that I think the Badgers are going to be, you know, a high-flying, you know, passing offense or whatever, but I think the base talent that they're working with this year might be a little deeper than what they had been working with in the past couple of years. And that's probably a good thing for a year where you're going to break in a new quarterback is to have, you know, a couple extra guys who, you know, you could throw out there and depend on them to go out and catch a pass if you need them to.
It seems like they've worked a little bit more on distributing the ball to the tight ends. And I know it doesn't mean a whole lot right now. They're just trying to find some people that can fit some roles. But do you see the offense changing a little bit where maybe we see more tight end use in this offense with this with this quarterback group and again, some of the better breakout performances by some of the tight ends early in practice?
I mean, like, that's – I think that's certainly possible. I mean, you look back at, you know, Paul Crist's previous stints at Wisconsin, and, you know, the tight ends were always a featured point of the passing game. And between, you know, Troy Fumagalli, who also had a nice practice today, he caught a bunch of passes, and not easy passes either. I mean, like he had some where he had to, you know, go for a full extension or, you know, kind of dive to his right or to his left to go grab those. And so with him, and then, you know, Eric Steffes has been, he's kind of struggled with injuries during his career, but he's been out there this year. And then if you throw in the younger guys like Tennyson, who's a very natural receiver, and then David Edwards, who's got a big frame that's great for, you know, it's a great fit for the position. And he showed off some nice athleticism. Yeah, I think there are definitely some pieces where, you know, the tight end could be a little bit more of a featured point. And I was talking with, you know, the tight ends coach, Mickey Turner, earlier in the week, and he said that, you know, he wants, you know, a good three or four guys that they can, you know, depend on. You know, it's not to say that they're going to play, you know, all of them evenly or whatever, but, you know, he wants to have a couple guys that they can depend on so that if they need to go to, like, 13 personnel or something like that where they need a couple tight ends on the field, you know, they're going to have some options to play with, you know, maybe in the play action game or something like that. And so I think it's definitely a possibility, and, you know, it's definitely a good sign for the, you know, I guess Bart Houston is not a younger quarterback, but he would be a new starter if he wins the job, or Alex Hornibrook would be a young quarterback. It's his first year to be eligible, you know, to go out and play for the Badgers. And, you know, what's that always say, you know, that I think that saying is like, you know, young quarterbacks, you know, need a good tight end that they can fall back on as kind of a safety net. So I think that would be a good development for the Badgers in this passing game.
John Veldy is here from BadgerBlitz.com, former Buckeyes fifth quarter contributor back in the day, here on the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza. And, of course, follow him on Twitter, at John Veldy. That's making sure on this note, VELDHUIS. And with that, I try. Have, you know, Kokorowski and Wesniewski. We make sure we get those last names right. And with just that, you talk about Hornibrook, you talk about Houston, maybe that's the next logical step in our talk about spring football. What have you seen out of them? And we both know, and it's, you know, one of those things with spring football where, especially with Coach Chris, and he mentioned it last Saturday, talking about how he wants the quarterbacks to make mistakes, to reach those limits. He mentioned that last year with Joel Stave
right,
in terms of how to push to see where they can go. And you know, we've heard the adage too with spring football, you poise those, you know, you're poised to ask those questions. And in fall football, fall camp, that's when you kind of answer them. But what have you seen out of Houston and Hornibrook? Both have had their good days, maybe both had their down days. What have you seen out of those two quarterbacks who, I mean, Kari Lyles won't be, unless he makes a really huge impact in fall camp, I mean, it's kind of a two-horse race right now.
Yeah, I would definitely agree that it's a two-man, you know, battle at this point. And I think that you were talking about how, you know, the coaches want the quarterbacks to kind of test themselves and see what throws they can make, what throws they can't make. And I think Chris described it as kind of like, you know, he wants his players to kind of touch the stove a little bit on bad ones. So, you know, if Bart or Alex goes out and throws a bad ball or puts it in a bad spot, you know, it's not necessarily a terrible thing if it gets picked off, because, you know, as long as they learn from it and realize, okay, well, I did this wrong. You know, I let the receiver too much, whatever. You build from that. You know, interceptions in that sense are not necessarily a bad thing. And you're right. I mean, like that was something that goes back to, you know, last spring when Joel was kind of testing some tight throwing windows and he was getting picked off. And, you know, it's just good to keep in mind that, you know, spring stats like that are not necessarily predictive of performance. I do think Hornibrook has been a little less consistent over these last couple practices. I mean, like that's you know, why you see, you know, these practices where he has, you know, multiple interceptions, whether it's 3, 4, or 5, something like that. I mean, ultimately, and you know, you also have to consider that sometimes, you know, a pass will hit a receiver in the hand, it gets tipped and picked, or, you know, some, I think it was Saturday, Bart had a, you know, it was technically an interception, but the ball just kind of slipped out of his hand and fell kind of right into T.J. Watt's red basket. And so, I mean, technically it counts as an interception, but it was more of a fluke play than anything. So it's just good to keep in mind that, you know, it's spring football. These guys are, you know, really trying to improve on themselves. But at the same time, you know, it has been interesting to see, you know, who I think is more consistent. I definitely think Hornibrook has made his fair share of mistakes, but you know, I don't know if Bart has gone out and, you know, been the embodiment of consistency either. So, you know, at this point, with what we've been able to see, I think it's still pretty open. But you know, it'll be really interesting to see where this battle goes in fall camp when, you know, the pressure's on a little bit more, I guess I could say.
You look at the schedule, and it's obviously tougher than the last couple of years. Open up with LSU, and then you open up the Big Ten with at Michigan State, at Michigan, home with the Buckeyes, and at Iowa. So it's tough, and I think one of the things that people are looking for is a little bit of improvement from the offensive line that, like, 3 years ago, you know, this was a legacy offensive line, the offensive line always turning out the stars. It struggled as of late. What do you see for the offensive line? Any changes on the offensive line? And do you think that this unit is a little bit more equipped to be a little bit more successful than they've been the last couple of years?
I would say that I think the offensive line is going to take a step forward this year, and that's a good thing. I mean, I don't want to even imagine what it would be like if they had to go through, you know, this upcoming schedule with the situation they had last year on the offensive line, where they had to play all the, you know, all the redshirt freshmen that had no game experience. That could have gotten really ugly, I guess I should say. But I like the pieces that are in place this year. I mean, like, Ryan Ramczyk, some of the other writers and I, and, you know, Jake, you might have, you know, joined in on this too, but it's like, you know, Ramczyk is almost like described as like a mythical figure, because we haven't really seen him go out there and play very much. I mean, like, we've seen, you know, him in a couple of practices, and he's looked pretty good. I mean, he's an athletic guy. He's got really good feet. And so, you know, at least from my layman's point of view, I mean, like, I can see why the coaching staff thinks highly enough of them to, you know, just kind of plug him right in there and say, okay, he's our starter at left tackle. And, you know, as you work your way on the other side, you know, through the rest of the line there, I think I like John Dietzen's ceiling. I think he seems like a step ahead of Micah Kapoy. I think if Dietzen hadn't redshirted last year, or if he hadn't been like a true freshman, I think he could have played. And so he might be kind of like Michael Dieter a couple of years ago, when, you know, he could have gotten in there if they needed him to, but they wanted to preserve that redshirt. And so I think Dietzen will be in the mix for some playing time. The interesting part is that Michael Dieter has been playing center, because Dan Bolt is out with a knee injury. He's recovering from knee surgery from when he got hurt at the end of the Illinois game last year. And apparently Joe Rudolph said that Volts came to him and said, hey, you know, if Dieter's playing really well at center, and to me, you know, it seems like Dieter has been handling that job pretty well, you know, Volts said that he's okay with moving to guard or, you know, something like that if it would be easier to leave Dieter at center for the continuity. Because, I mean, as far as, like, snapping the ball goes and the communication, I mean, center's a really key position where you want some consistency there. And so it will be interesting when Volts is healthy enough to come back to see, you know, if he's going to be slotted in somewhere at guard, or, you know, which guard spot you put him at. Because I think on the right side, they do like what they have in Bo Benchwall and then Jacob Maxwell there. And so, you know, it will be interesting to see, you know, who all gets these starting spots. But I think you have, you know, probably seven guys who legitimately could compete for a spot, or, you know, for five spots. And so that's a good thing to have with the tough schedule that they have coming up. I do think they will be better. You might see, you know, a lot more of the results in maybe like 2017, because this group is so young. But as a whole, I do think it's going to be a boost to the offense, and I think you will see the running game perform, you know, a good step ahead of where they were last year, and that's a good thing for, you know, any Wisconsin offense.
We're here with John Veldheis from BadgerBlitz.com. Make sure you check out the great work John does every week. Subscribe to BadgerBlitz.com. They got some great things going on with him and John McNamara and many others there on that site. Great job you guys do there. And I know we're running up against time, but wanted to ask you real quick, besides Ryan Ramczyk should just go by Ramczyk and be that mythical figure and kind of have that pro wrestling vibe to him. He's big enough. Vince McMahon would probably love him if the NFL doesn't work out for him, especially with it. Yeah, but you have this the defense really kind of touch base real quick. Jimmy Leonard, now Coach Leonard, with the defensive backs, how have they looked? And also with that, you know, kind of maybe just a broad stroke. How's that defense look now underneath Justin Wilcox? In your opinion? It's hard to really tell when you talk to some of the players because it's more they're talking about terminology. Some things are staying the same, some aren't. Sometimes, you know, the terminology from the year prior with Dave Aranda may stay. But what have you seen out of that defense so far? Which, from the practices I've seen, they've looked pretty good.
I would agree. It will be interesting to see schematically how much different they are from Dave Aranda's philosophy or whatnot. But I think they have a good base of talent to work with coming up. I mean, you start just on the D-line real quick. I think you have, probably five guys at least in there who you think they can count on. I guess the question mark is Jeremy Patterson, who's backing up Olive Sonopolu at nose guard. But, Coach Brechterfield seems to think that Patterson has taken a good step forward, and he's been getting – good consistent reps on that second team. And so if you have a good six guys that you could rotate on the D-line and then maybe get you like a seventh or an eighth or something in there, I think that will be a pretty solid group. I really like what they have on the inside at linebacker because they have three guys that are battling for two spots in Chris Orr, Jack Cicci, and T.J. Edwards. I think they're all going to split playing time pretty well, and that could keep the defense, those linebackers fresh. I think, obviously you got Vince Beagle, outside backer, and I think T.J. Watt is going to be a good fit on the other side, paired up with him. He's athletic. He's made a good couple plays, whether it's sacks or interceptions or something like that. And then when you get to the defensive backfield, that's the big question mark. But there is some talent there. I mean, like Sojourn Shelton, I think were covered and had a good junior season at corner. I like what Derek Tyndall brings to the table as the other corner, and the coaching staff seems to agree. And then you've got a couple guys that are battling to be at third corner, whether it's Natrell Jamerson or Titus Booker. There's some guys that have some potential there. And then at safety, Dakota Dixon has been out with a groin injury the last couple practices, but I think he's a good fit for a solid safety or for a strong safety, even if he's a bit undersized. But he's a big hitter, and that's a good thing to have at that position. And then at free safety, Arrington Farrar has been getting a lot of reps, and I think he has a high ceiling. He had another pick today during, I think it was Red Zone 7-on-7. But he's made some plays this spring, and then, Leo Musso is not somebody that you should count out of there either. I mean, Musso has some big playability to him, at least as far as what I've seen from practices go over the last couple of years. And so there's definitely some talent there, and it does depend on, how they all fit into, the scheme and the play calling. But I think there's good reason to be optimistic that there's not going to be a huge drop-off just because Aranda left as a coordinator.
Excellent. On that note, John, I know we've gone a little over what I promised you, sir. Apologies on that. But with that, thank you so much again. Hopefully I'll catch you on Saturday. And like I said, let me know what SPF you need because I'll make sure that I provide it for us down in the sunny confines of Camp Randall Stadium.
I will be there. Maybe I'll bring the donuts this time.
Sweet. Oh, yeah. Scotty, I got to tell you about that one later. Thanks again, John. Have a great night. We'll see you this weekend.
All right. Yeah, you guys have a good night.
You too. Guys, that's John Veldheis, BadgerBlitz.com. Make sure you guys check out him, obviously, on Twitter, at John Veldheis, and then, of course, at BadgerBlitz.com. And, with that, Scotty, we're rolling in there. Yeah, and the reason what John was talking about, I brought donuts to the media crew during spring ball practice on Saturday. It was kind of fun. I was hungry more than anything. I'm on a diet. And I passed by Greenbush and I said, yep. And so I was also thinking about the other media guys saying, hey, maybe I can get them some donuts. And a fun note too, by the way, found out that with media people, if you're in a media capacity and you offer a football player a donut or a food thing, as long as it's part of the media activities, is how UW official referred to it as, it wouldn't be an NCAA secondary violation. So the more you know there.
Yep, and the more I hate the NCAA. So, I mean, just absolutely ridiculous. I understand controls need to be in place. So stupid. But anyway.
Well, do you want to talk about that real quick? Let's talk about, I mean, banning the satellite cams. I was on a podcast, a brief podcast yesterday with Ben Morgel from BadgerNation.com, talking about just the fact of this the simple fact that, you know, we were going to talk about it, actually. No, we didn't actually get a chance to talk about it, but satellite camps overall, where they ban, you know, you have the two main players, the ACC and the SEC, and there were talks about them lobbying before this, talking about this banning the satellite camps that have been made use by James Franklin first for Penn State. And then you saw that with Jim Harbaugh, and he's the one that kind of took it to that next level at Michigan. You know, but then you see like conferences like the Mountain West or the Pac-12 approving this, and I mean the Big Ten was pretty much the only really big conference that had put its foot down. Not even initial thoughts. Well, your thoughts on these new rules, and I mean, constantly, for me, Scotty, I feel that it really hurts the student athletes that may get looked over by those schools down south, and could have opportunities at some of the Big Ten schools and other schools up north.
Again, I think the basically whatever the SEC and some of those teams there want, the NCAA gives to them, and they're still not happy, and they still talk about pulling out and doing their own thing. I'm just far more concerned with some of the other ridiculous things. I'm not in favor of paying athletes per se, but I am in favor of allowing them a chance to have a legitimate job and actually make a little bit of money to go do some things legally. Forget about the rumors and all the other stuff about some of the illegal activities that happen at some schools. I'm so fed up with the governing body of the NCAA that it makes me nuts. And I'm not, like I said, I'm not over the top about it where, well, they should be able to do this and they should make all this money and the NCAA gets rich on them. I get that as part of the game. I know the NCAA makes a lot of money on these student athletes, but they do get a free education. I get all that. But, again, a violation because you gave them a donut or a violation because the coach help the player go down to visit his mom on her deathbed. I don't know, man. Like, whatever. It is what it is. So.
All right. I feel you on that. I just personally think it's bad for. Obviously, it's a power play for both sides. You see where they're coming from. The SEC and the ACC are trying to protect their turf, and obviously the Big Ten and other schools up north are trying to get talent and try to be competitive, you know, we'll see what comes out of it, and hopefully there are some changes that are made in the near future. I know that many people are throwing out so many different possibilities, but what's also ridiculous looking at this 2016 Green Bay Packers schedule is their week 4 bye after playing Detroit at home, and then they have to wait another week to play the New York Giants. Your thought, have you had a chance to look at some of that NFL schedule for the Green Bay Packers and initial thoughts with, you know, you play your first two away games and then you kind of sink your teeth into four straight, you know, they're at home for four straight weeks and they have a pretty intriguing, I would say a pretty intriguing December into January.
Yeah, I used to get all excited about the schedule release and try to predict before the draft even what their record was going to be and all that other stuff. You know, the week 4 bye stinks, but somebody's got to have it. Like, that's when byes start. So some unlucky two or four teams are going to get stuck with that. And, you know, kind of is what it is. I wish week 1 and week 3 were reversed because I'm in the Jacksonville area September 25th, so that would have been interesting. I would have obviously been able to get some tickets for that game. But, yeah, it's not a perfect science. There is a lot that goes into it. I think, though, you look at the early bye, but then you have the Giants, Cowboys, and then you have a short week for the Bears. It would be their sixth game, but then they get 10 days off. So that's almost like another bye, perhaps. But it is what it is. You know what? The Packers have had seasons where the bye has come later in the year, and it still doesn't preclude them from injuries and that sort of thing. So I'm not too concerned about it. You know, obviously, the ideal week is week 8 because you're right midway through the season. But, you know, other than that, it looks good. If the Packers stock up in the draft and they improve some of the holes, they should still be the favorite. That week 2 game against the Vikings when they open up the new stadium will be a huge early season tilt. I think the Seattle game in December at home is a big one as well. But otherwise, pretty favorable. After that Vikings game, as you mentioned, 4 straight home games, then on the road, then home. Then they have the 3 in a row on the road. One of them is Titans, who, despite the huge blockbuster trade they made today, they're still not going to be a very good team. I don't know. We'll see. You know, I think some of the bigger stories, though, is a couple of NFL quick stories. Obviously, the murder of Will Smith, that was big. The more controversy with Johnny Manziel and the Packers trying out a German receiver, which seems to be getting huge news in different outlets across the country, nationally, not just here. But really, we're going to have to start talking about the draft. I mean, the draft is coming up. And again, 2 weeks from now, in a big trade today, where the Rams move up, they get the number 1 pick overall. They give up their number 1 and and then there were some other moving parts within that. But obviously trying to go big their first season in L.A., but I think they give up a lot. I mean, you're giving up 2 second and a mid-first rounder, probably to draft a quarterback, likely to get out of Cal, but I don't know. I just think it's a lot to give up.
It is. It was a huge trade to start the morning. Obviously, the NFL tries to make this season schedule, like the release, an event. They try to make it comparable to the Masters, but how much they prep it and go for it, obviously it's never the case. But that was a huge trade to start off, and Elliott's trying to make a big splash. You can commend them for trying to find a quarterback. You can try to find them trying to have that ability to get a franchise quarterback to start new, start fresh in LA. But what they gave up was immense. That's the Titans, things are like, you wonder if the Titans will be able to take care of those picks and use them and draft wisely. And obviously they have a great team in Marcus Mariota and whatnot, but will they be able to capitalize? The Rams don't pick after that 15th overall pick until the 4th round, the 110th overall selection.
Yeah.
So that's huge.
And then they have the 110th, and then they have the 113th because they got that back in return. But it's not just this year. Give up your first, 2 seconds, and a third, and then you give up next year's first and third. That's the part. Okay, if you want to mortgage this year to get the quarterback you want, fine. But now you're mortgaging next year as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And with that, it's one of those things that, to me, it makes me wonder, the quarterbacks in this class, they're intriguing, but you wonder, and obviously it's the league is the league of the quarterback, and you have to have a franchise quarterback or at least a halfway decent quarterback to make noise and to really solidify the franchise. And Wisconsin fans in Green Bay, or those that cheer for the Packers, are very lucky and fortunate to have Favre and Rodgers for the past 25 years that they haven't had to actually worry about that. But you look at teams like St. Louis, or now Los Angeles. You look at guys like teams like Philadelphia that are sulking, even though they've locked up Sam Bradford. But they've paid, how much did they pay Sam Bradford? And how many games has he played? it's definitely a quarterback's league. And we'll see how that turns out if they do turn their attention to Wentz and Goff, I think, from California.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Jared Goff and Wentz, yeah.
And on that note,
and I know that they look at it. I know that they look at it and they go, okay, you know, Winston and Mariota looked good last year. I don't know if these guys are that, but it's still a crapshoot. Yes, you need that young quarterback, but and look how many young quarterbacks Jacksonville took before things finally started to look good last year with Bortles. You know, I mean, so it's still a risk. It's still a gamble. You got to make sure you have weapons around them. I mean, there's more to it than just, well, we get the quarterback and that's going to take care of it all, because that's not how it works. So we'll see. But I think some of it, too, is, you know, they want to make splash. It's their first year there, so back in L.A., so I suppose. Somewhere down the road, too, when I get a chance to talk about some of the stuff going on at UWM, the NBA playoffs would be great to get into. But I just wanted to spend a little bit of time, early one-week impressions on the Milwaukee Brewers. And more importantly, you know, they've been fine enough. I mean, I still don't understand Domingo Santana batting leadoff. But okay, you know, they've been fine enough. But Willie Peralta has been terrible. And that's not an understatement. His ERA above 10 through three starts. And that, to me, is disappointing because Jimmy Nelson's been good. Anderson's been decent. But that's the one guy. That's the one guy they needed to, if they were going to even give the illusion of competing for something this year, they needed another step, that next step out of Willie Peralta, and it doesn't look like they're getting it.
It's and today, obviously, the Brewers not necessarily playing up to par, and it's a tough season, and if they're going to have any chance to be a decent season, that pitching with Peralta, the young nucleus of Youngman and Peralta, and you mentioned Jimmy Nelson. And today, with obviously a bad outing by Peralta in the 7-0 loss, and Jaime Garcia on the opposite side, the complete opposite spectrum. There was a no hitter for, I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, 5 2/3 innings until Santana had that 2-out single in the sixth. But you look at the fact that Peralta, I mean, 5 runs in 5 innings, and yeah, you meant ERA above 10. He needs to really kind of start pulling it together. And this team really, 5-10 last year with an ERA up near 5. He's already 0-3, and they need to get the – I mean, this is part of the nucleus they started building around, and I just don't know how he'll pan out, or, you know, what was the aberration from years past? You know, let me ask you that. Scotty, I mean, you look at, 2014, 17-11 with 3.53 ERA and had 154 strikeouts and a whip of, I mean, his whip was high that year. It was kind of high compared to, 2013. But really, it just, I'd say, what was the aberration? Because, the first of 4 years that he's been consistently starting for Milwaukee, 14 was the best. But the other three, ERA's the lowest, or was 4.37 in 2013 outside of that 1 year in 2014.
Well, that's the aberration. I mean, I think, young 24-year-old who goes 11-15 and it makes that jump. But if you look at some of the things, the whip went down a little bit from 13 to 14. But you're right, 1.304. is a high whip for a guy who wants 17 games. So, he had a little bit of fielding luck behind him there. But I think the problem is when you look at the fact, so last year, he was injured, whatever, but not a lot of strikeouts. 60 strikeouts in 108 innings. The year before, 154 in 198. So the strikeouts are down. Makes you wonder about the overall velocity. Makes you wonder about maybe not being able to develop another pitch. Whatever it comes down to, it's certainly looking more and more like Willie Peralta of 2016 and 2013 is the best you could hope for, and that 2014 might have been the, that might have been the aberration. But whatever it is, it's disappointing. And when you think about what, you know, the Brewers were going to try to make some trades. Now, Bellinger are being hurt, that hurts their ability to move him at midseason. But, you know, one of the guys that, that, you know, they talk about moving, and then end up trying to move a guy like Jonathan Lucroy, they're going to probably have to move him pitching. Because they seem to have a lot of outfielders and middle infielders down in the farm. But they don't have that person. They don't have the corner infielders of the future unless, you know, Ryan Braun is the first baseman of the future, which we can talk about in another show. And they don't have deep pitching. They have a couple of guys, but it sounds like if they're going to try to get anything for a guy like Lucroy or a guy like Aaron Hill, if he ever starts hitting, it's going to have to be you try to stockpile on as much pitching as you can. Again, so far, I think they've done a good job against the Stearns and the team of doing some things to build that farm system up, and it's been wonderful that they've been able to switch. However, we're getting to the point now where you start to see some of the weaknesses, and the weaknesses are at pitching. So we'll see. We'll see. Lucroy's hitting 310 early on. If he can continue to hit, his defense stays good, you can obviously increase his value. They need him. Another guy is that they have a chance to move to stay healthy, and that's really what it comes down to. Otherwise, you know, I've enjoyed watching a few things. Santana, Carter's been better than advertised. If Chris Carter hits in the 250s with the way he can draw walks, he'll take it. Their walks are up 40% from this same time last year to this year. So that's an improvement, even though the team batting average is 30 or something like that. So, it's better than we thought it would be. When they've lost, they've looked horrible. When they've won, they've been fun to watch. You're still looking at a team that's going to be, you're lucky to get in the mid-70s, but you're looking for improvement. And that's why I think the Peralta story is a bigger deal to me, because you haven't seen the improvement. And it makes you think that they're going to have to do some things to stockpile the team in the front. And that, by the way, Jake, that's the position where you have to build through the farm system. I mean, you see what the going rate is now for starting pitchers. You know, it's going up. And this team eventually, hopefully, will be in a position to spend some money. But even when they are spending money, when they're at $100 million payroll, they weren't able to contend with contracts like Zach Greinke was getting at the time and CC Sabathia. So you're going to have, if you're going to contend in a very tough division, that's probably going to be tough for quite a number of years, with the Cubs and the Pirates and, you know, a little bit yet with the Cardinals and their farm system, you're going to have some homegrown pitching. And if you're not able to get that, you know, it doesn't matter how good you think you could be offensively, you're going to need some pitching to contend. And right now, like I said, the farm system has some players, some pitching, but it's certainly not bursting at the seams like some of the other farm systems.
With that, we'll definitely next week dive in a little bit deeper. Hopefully we'll have our Brewers correspondent or one of them coming up down the road and kind of break down a little bit more of the season and obviously trade prospects for Jonathan Lucroy even and also look into the baseball season. Still a lot. Obviously this team, not a lot of optimism in terms of records, but like you said, it'll be interesting to see how they develop throughout. Anything else you want to talk about? Obviously, Scotty, we're getting close up to our time for today. But, you know, you mentioned, let's take a look. Barry Alvarez said at the Wisconsin Sports Awards that he thinks that the college game day is coming to Wisconsin LSU, which is up in Lambeau Field, yeah. First thing of the season on September 3rd. Unfortunately, Monte Ball arrested this past weekend again, which is his offseason spiraled out of control he was arrested.
Brent Moss was arrested as well, so.
Yeah, Brent Moss was too.
NBA playoffs, hey, the Golden State Warriors break the Bulls record and more silliness when people try to compare a team from 20 years ago. Oh, yeah, that Bulls team would have swept them, or that Bulls team would have beaten Golden State in five. Here's the thing. That Bulls team was really good. But 20 years ago, as good as that team was, the athletes nowadays are still better. They get better every year. They get more athletic every year. If the Bulls would have played Golden State, if they could take them both in a prime, maybe the Bulls would win, maybe not, but it wouldn't be a sweep. It'd be a seven-game series or something of that nature. But anyway, congratulations to them. And Steph Curry, over 400 three-pointers hit.
It's
an amazing stat. It is. It's insane. We'll get a chance to break down the playoffs some more as we get into it. Looking, Golden State and San Antonio, obviously the favorites, and I think Oklahoma and the Clippers should advance in their first-round series. The East is a little bit more wide open, but I can't believe Toronto yet. So I still think Cleveland's the team to beat there. But we could delve more into that. And you know, tough being a Brewer fan this year, but Minnesota, the Twins are 0-9. But that's not the stat that's amazing. The stat that's amazing is they've only given up 36 runs, which is only four a game. Should be able to win a couple games there. They've only scored 14 runs on the season. So far, early on. Now I say that, and I'll probably rip off like 10 out of 12. But an 0-9 start, and they find themselves seven games back in the AL Central.
On that note, thank you guys for listening in. And like I said, next week we're going to try to make it a little bit more consistent. Apologies for the delay in and the length of time between our last two podcasts. And like I said, we'll talk some baseball. We'll talk some playoffs. We'll break down some more NFL draft stuff. It's come up in 2 weeks, folks. It's come up less than 2 weeks. Hopefully, we can get some. I'll make some calls, see who we can get to talk about some NFL draft goodies. It's one of some of our favorite time of the year. On that note, folks, thanks for tuning in. Always check us out at Bucky's Fifth Quarter, at B5Q's Twitter handle. Check out Scotty at ScottWizNews. To me at Jake Coco B5Q. And like I said, have a great week. Enjoy that weather. We'll talk to you guys next week for sure on the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza.
Accordion solo, American Polka, played by Mr. John J. Kimball, Edison Record.
Yeah, no, the book's been crazy busy on our end, and it just are you there?
Hello?